Morning. I hope you guys are doing well and you had a good morning. I'd like to thank those of you that gave class presentations. I really enjoyed them. I learned lots of really interesting things. Metallic sulfur, satanic nickel, all kinds of interesting things that were passed around were pretty interesting. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to the ones both today and tomorrow. So very, very cool. Today what we're going to do is we're going to continue on with electron filling order calculations. And I think this stuff will start to come back down to reality a little bit. We left off with a way that people use to describe electrons as they get placed in orbitals. And this is based on what's called the N plus L rule. And this diagram, called an Aufbau diagram, is something created in the 20s. And anyway, it relates how electrons get placed in. To draw this on a piece of paper is very easy. You start with 1s, 2s, and you go all the way up in s's, and you could go up to 15s, whatever number you wanted to. And then the p's start like 1 over. Remember, it's s, p, d, f, g, etc. like that. So the p's start at 2, the d's start at 3, etc., etc. And then these diagonal arrows reflect the n plus l values. The number in front is the n number. S always means l equals 0. So 1 plus 0 is where the n plus l equals 1 came from. When you get to 2s, you have 2 plus 0, or n plus l is 2. And these two orbitals right here have n plus l equals 3. This would be 3 plus 0. Every time you see s, think l equals 0. But p means that l equals 1. So here we also have 2 plus 1, or n plus l equals 3. And this actually is a really nice way to describe the way that electrons are filled in. You always start filling in electrons on the 1s first, then you go to the 2s. Between the 2p and the 3s, you do the lowest n first. So you do 2p first and then 3s, 3p, 4s, 3d, etc., etc., etc. So this is one way to figure out how electrons get placed in atoms. It's not the only way, but it is one way that totally works fine. And we'll see how this works. Now, we've seen that when you have an L equals 0, which is what the S means, the only M sub L value that's allowed when L equals 0 is M sub L equals 0. So there's one orbital in each of those S's. And then finally, on Monday, we saw that each orbital can hold two electrons, a spin up and a spin down. What this means is that every one of these s orbitals here can hold two electrons. And every one of these p's right here, because there are three orbitals per p system, they can hold up to six electrons. D's can hold up to 10, f's can hold up to 14, etc., etc. And that's no accident that on the periodic table, the left two columns are kind of separate from each other. We're going to start calling those the S block elements, and helium should be right there for this discussion. Boron through neon, there are six elements there. That's the P system we're going to start seeing. So we'll start calling these the P block, and if you count up from scantium over to zinc, there are 10 electrons, 10 elements there. Those are going to be the D block. So you, instead of using Aufbau, if this is weird and you think it's strange to put arrows through little balls with N plus L numbers, that's fine. You can also use the periodic table to read it to figure out these electrons as well. So let's see how we start placing electrons in. We'll talk about the different types of methods that are used and check this out. There are two ways to describe the electrons in an atom, and the most common one by far is called the spectroscopic notation, or sometimes it's SPDF. And what you do is you have the type of NL system that you're putting electrons into, and then the number of electrons is a superscript in the upper right-hand corner. Now, we've seen in chemistry that hydrogen, which is number one up there, one really means number of protons, but if this is neutral hydrogen, it also has one electron in it. The first electron always placed in the 1s system. So hydrogen with its one electron, we would write this as a 1s1 electron configuration. And again, this number is the N value. The letter is the L. SPDF corresponds to 0, 1, 2, 3. And now this little superscript part right here just refers to the number of electrons. So if you see things like 1s1, 1s2, 1s2, 2s1, etc., these are what we call spectroscopic notation. And they refer to where the electrons are around the atom. You can think as the nucleus is very, very close to the 1s. Electrons want to be as close to the nucleus as they can. And in this case, that would make sense. Now, when you go to helium, helium has 2 electrons. Its atomic number is 2. So it has 1 more electron than the hydrogen does. That second electron will also fit in the 1s orbital. So we write this as 1s2 for these electrons in helium. Hydrogen was 1s1 with 1 electron. Helium is 1s2. So 1s2 here, that would be the spectroscopic or SPDF notation. Now, you can also write what's called an orbital box diagram for the atom. And each of the S's holds 1 orbital. And because of that positive 1/2, negative 1/2 m sub s value, you could write this as having 2 electrons in it. And we designate it as 1 being spin up and 1 being spin down. And the reason for that is positive 1/2, which is probably this arrow, corresponds to an electron spinning in the same direction as some kind of external magnetic field. The red one is probably the spin negative 1/2, and that would be spinning opposite some magnetic field. So 1s2 is obviously a lot easier to write out than having a little box with an up and a down arrow, but both of them are really handy. This way will tell us if the system has any magnetism associated with it. We'll see that here in a little bit. Both of these are really good. Now, we also saw on Monday that by the Pauli exclusion principle, each electron has to have its own set of quantum numbers. And no electron can have the same set of quantum numbers in an atom. So this first electron, you could write it as N equals 1, L equals 0. And that's where the 1s comes from, because L equals 0 means s. M sub L equals 0 means we write just 1 box right here. We write 1 orbital here. And M sub S positive 1/2 means it's an up spinning electron, if you will. And the other one would be identical except for that second M sub S value of negative 1/2. So if we wanted to send an invitation to this electron, but not this electron, we would have a separate address and stuff for it compared to the other one right there. Any questions? Yes.
Is the positive S spinning electron always
It's not a big energy difference, Rebecca, but I am trying to push you towards that. There's a 10 to the minus 19th joules energy savings. Woohoo! Coupon! Anyway, it's a little bit better energy-wise and stuff, so I'm pushing you that way, but really it could be either way. And if you want to write the negative one first, that's fine. Blake, did you have a question too? That'll be good. Yeah. Other question. Okay. So this is what we're going to do now. We're going to start seeing how the different atoms are built in terms of their electrons, all right? And instead of having all of the N values on the same level, you begin to see separation. So remembering that the first number is the N number, 1s always the lowest in energy. It's closest to the nucleus. You can think like right here is the nucleus. But then 2s and 2p will split apart. 2p is a little bit higher energy than 2s because it has a higher N plus L value. So the 2p will be filled in after the 2s. Now, even though 3s and 2p do have the same N plus L value of 3, we fill in the lower ends first and the higher ends after. So 2p gets filled in before 3s. So notice the pattern, 1s, 2, 2s, 2p, 3s, 3p, and 4s jumps in before 3d. All of these kind of things start coming out in this kind of a discussion. And again, really what we're looking at here is just the off-bound diagram again, just put on the periodic table. So we'll start building some of the atoms. We'll look at their electron configurations and how it can be done. If you don't like the off-bound diagram, and that's okay, you can also use the periodic table to read the elements. And we started to get into this a little bit on Monday. The left two columns, which includes helium, which should be over here for this discussion, sometimes those are called the S-block elements, because the outer electrons that you're filling in are always going to be S's. And the numbers in front of them correspond really well to the periods. So if you look on either periodic table in this room, there's a period 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all right? Hydrogen and helium are in the 1s. Lithium and beryllium are in the 2s. So you can literally use the period number to tell what number goes in front of the s. So francium and radium down here, those would be the 7s, and cesium and barium would be the 6s, et cetera, et cetera. The right-hand six columns refer to the p-block elements. And those guys, you're filling, the outer electrons are filling in some p electrons. And their numbers also correspond really well with the period numbers as well. So this is 2s here on the left, we would have 2p on the right. And 6s here would correspond to 6p's over here. The middle ones, the B groups on our American version of the periodic table, those are the D block elements, the transition metals. The D's are a little different than the other ones, as some of your presentation papers really showed yesterday, quite nicely actually. These guys are filling in D electrons in their outer ones. But notice here this pattern. There's 4s on the left and 4p on the right, but a 3d right here. So if you use the periodic table as your guide to the atomic orbitals, just realize that these B's, you take this number, the period number, and you subtract one from it. So scantium begins the 3d electrons. It's in the fourth period, but you go n minus 1 to find the number. Hafnium down here is in 6 minus 1. It's a 5d electron, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, you can use it for lanthanides and actinides too. Those are the period number minus 2. They're even stranger. It's easier to see in maybe one of the big periodic tables. Lanthanum 57 starts right here. It's in the sixth period, technically. That's what these are. But it's that number minus 2 to get to the 4Fs. And the 5Fs would be underneath it. So if you like using the periodic table, and honestly, that's what I use a lot of the times, just remember it's the D's are period number minus 1. The F's are period number minus 2. Any questions? So lithium, group 1A, alkali metal, all right, reacts a little bit, but not too well with water. Atomic number 3, and that means 3 protons. So in a neutral atom of lithium, which is what we're talking about right now, how many electrons will be in lithium?
3. 3,
that's right. 3 protons means 3 electrons will be there to balance it out. So when we're building an electron configuration for lithium, we have to have a total of 3 electrons. So what that means is we always start with the 1s group, all right? And the 1s is a single room, all right? It holds 2 electrons maximum. So we would write 1s2 to correspond to the first 2 of these 3 electrons. The next electron will go in the next part of that diagram. And if you use off-bow, or if you use the periodic table, the last electron is in a 2s orbital. So if you read the periodic table, hydrogen and helium are both 1s electrons, 1s2. Lithium begins the 2s series because of the 2 right there. And so this would be a 1s2, 2s1, combination. So the lithium's electron configuration 1s2 2s1. Now, we can write that in different ways, but one way to write it as well as the spectroscopic, which is what the 1s2, 2s1 is you can also write it as orbital box notation. 1s is the lowest, 2s would be the next highest. Notice that I have an up arrow and a down arrow, and if Rebecca wants to do the down arrow first and the up arrow follow, that's fine, it's no big deal. And the same thing here, if Rebecca wishes to write it down instead of up, it's not a problem. All right, I'm pushing you towards writing it up first, but really it doesn't make any difference. Just show that one electron is in there and life is good. This is a paramagnetic atom. Paramagnets are when you have electrons with an up without a corresponding down, or a down without a corresponding up. These electrons right here are diamagnetic because the up electron has a down electron. But when you have an up without a down or a down without an up, that's when you have a paramagnetic system. So pure lithium has an attraction for other magnetic fields because of this electron right there. These electrons could care less, all right? But that one electron would be enough then to make something happen. Questions on that? Okay. Now beryllium, right next door to lithium, has one more proton. Its atomic number is 4. It's group 2A, it's an alkaline earth metal. And so if there are 4 protons in a neutral atom, you would also have 4 electrons. So that lowest electron is going to go in the lowest unoccupied atomic orbital. Remember that S's hold up to 2 electrons, so that fourth electron will also go in the 2S system. So beryllium has a 1s2, 2s2 electron configuration. And again, notice that the superscripts, if you add them all together, that gives you 4. That's the total number of electrons in beryllium. If you write out the atomic orbital box notation, 1s2, here's an up with a down arrow, no problem. And now our 2s box also has an up with a down. Now, we're not going to put electrons up here. There's a little bit of an energy gap, and in chemistry, it's always about the energy. So what's a lower energy state to have them both paired up together? 2s2 would be the best way to write this. And by writing it that way, we see that beryllium is diamagnetic. So you can put any kind of magnetic field you want to, in theory, around beryllium. It's not going to have any interaction with it. It's going to be totally happy by itself. So 1s2, 2s2 would be the configuration for beryllium. Boron is the next one, and number 5, which means it has 5 protons and, of course, 5 electrons. So that fifth electron now, it's going to go outside of the 1s2, 2s2 shell. It's going to be the first electron in a 2p1 orbital. The p's can hold up to 6 electrons total. So this is one electron in a space that holds up to 6 electrons. That one will go in one of these. Again, we're having 3 2p orbitals. We talked earlier how the p's will have like an x, a Y, and a Z orbital, these weird figure 8 kind of things. That's what those little boxes mean. So one of them would be X, Y, and Z, and it doesn't matter which one it goes into. But regardless, because of that one electron, boron is paramagnetic. So boron will be interested in magnets and stuff if you place them next to it. Yeah.
Will it be more so than lithium because of the fact that it's 6 as opposed to
Cool. So at this level, we're only going to think about the amount of paramagnetism as the number of unpaired electrons. So we would say that lithium, hydrogen, and boron are all the same magnetism. But we will see some examples here, Blake. You're right, though, too, with 2 unpaired electrons, and those would be more. Yeah, good. Excellent question. Other questions? Carbon, group 4A, 6 protons, 6 electrons. The 6th electron will go right after borons, 1s2, 2s2, 2p1, and it'll be a 2p2 system. So 6 total electrons. Now, you have choices when it comes to the 6th electron. For example, you could put both electrons in the same box, all right? You could have an up and a down, or a down and an up, in the same box, which is totally legit. However, there's a preference for having each electron in its own orbital first, and then going back and pairing them up later. And really, the reason for it is because to put an up with a down or the down with the up, there's a little bit of energy involved. And, you know, just like you don't want to spend money, probably, unless you have to, unless it's something fun, right? Chemistry is the same way, all right? And putting electrons together costs a little bit of money and energy in my world. And there's no reason for it because there's an empty place right next door. So this is an example of what's called Hund's rule, all right? And Hund's rule just means put electrons in their own box until you can't anymore, then you start pairing them up. Now, we're gonna put them all in, these are all what they call degenerate, which means the same energy. So it doesn't matter if you put them all in the same box and stuff like that. They can all go individually first and then put them together. But my favorite way to interpret Hund's rule is if you live in a house and you have a sibling, a brother or sister, and if you don't have a lot of rooms in your house, you can share a room with your brother or sister, but you know, it's kind of weird, like they like techno and you're into death metal or whatever, right? And you know, the music clashes and you've got different posters and stuff. So if a room opens up, you will take, you or your brother or sister would take that other room so you can have your own space, all right? And this is kind of what I think of in terms of Hund's rule. Now, it's really all about energy and not death metal versus techno. However, the process is the same. Electrons want to have their own three-dimensional space if they can without pairing up. It really comes down to the energy. Up and down does take a little bit of energy, and if you can have these electrons in their own rooms, it's better.
Yeah.
Can I show you? Sure.
Why do we have everywhere three boxes? Like here three boxes and here.
Cool. So every time that you see a P, all right? P means that L equals one, all right? And from there, allowed M sub L values, negative L to positive L. So negative one, zero, plus one. And these three numbers here, these are the number of orbitals. And we're filling in the orbitals basically along here. So all of the P's all have L equals one, which means three orbitals, all right? So it doesn't matter if it's 2P, 3P, or 100P, you would always write like the three boxes. Now with S, all right, L equals zero. M sub L can only be zero for that one. So we only write one box for all of these S's. It could be 1,000 S and we would still write just one. Yeah, right on. That's a good question. Other questions? Yes, Grant.
So wouldn't the chemical mechanism of it too if you put them in the same box?
Absolutely.
They don't all match up, but if you put them in the same box,
that's exactly it. And that's why Hund's rule is so important to chemists, because yeah, we do see the carbon here is paramagnetic, not diamagnetic. If this wasn't around, you're right, it would be diamagnetic and not interested in magnetic fields. Totally, well done. That's what Hund saw and stuff. They thought, something must be going on here. Perfect. Other questions? So nitrogen, one more electron than carbon, seven electrons in the neutral nitrogen. 1s2, 2s2, 2p3. And again, notice how all of these numbers together equal seven. This is a nice way to check that you're where you should be. And again, by Hund's rule, you want to keep each electron in their own orbital as long as you can. So here, the electrons are each in their own orbital, their own box. Nitrogen is paramagnetic. It's actually very paramagnetic, going along to what Grant said and also piggybacking on what Blake said. I'm not going to talk about that here, I guess. Anyway, the more unpaired electrons we're going to have, the more paramagnetic something is. I guess I'm going to talk about that later. Sorry about that. Anyway, realize that, again, each one is going to be in their own box until you just have no more room to put it in. Then you'll start pairing it up. And that is a segue to oxygen. Oxygen has one more electron than nitrogen. It's 1s2, 2s2, 2p4 with 8 total electrons. Now we have to start pairing things up, all right? Our house only has so many rooms, all right? We only have 3 rooms, and now we have 4 people living there all of a sudden. So somebody has to pair up. Now you might think, hey, let's put it in the 3s. There's a pretty big energy gap between the 2p and the 3s. It's even larger than this positive, negative, 1/2 thing. So this is not a normal state for oxygen, all right? We're talking here about what's called ground state configurations, which is the lowest energy. But in order to do that, we do need to pair it up. So we do have to pay that 10 to the minus 19th joules or so, a very small amount of energy. Oxygen has 2 unpaired electrons. It is also paramagnetic. But again, you wouldn't pair these all up and make them diamagnetic like what Grant was talking about. Try and keep them in their own place if possible. Fluorine has 1 more electron. It's a 2p5 configuration. When you put that extra electron in, it also pairs up with one of the electrons. So now we only have 1 singly occupied orbital, all right? It's still paramagnetic, definitely, but there's only 1 unpaired electron while the other ones had 2 or 3. Again, the gap to 3s would be pretty large. And then finally, when you get to neon with 10 electrons, now you have a 2p6. So when you put that 6th electron in, again, because the gap up to 3s is large, each electron now is paired up. So this one is also a diamagnetic atom. All the up electrons have a down. Neon is not very interested in magnetic fields. Yeah, Blake.
Is that why fluorines and oxygens are much more willing to rip off an electron?
Yes.
Neon's essentially not massive.
Absolutely, that's right. We're going to see they all want to be like the noble gases, man. Good. Other questions? We've now reached the end of the second period, and the periods again go left to right. So the first period was only hydrogen and helium. The second period went from lithium over to neon, all right? And you can see now that all of these 2s's and stuff are filled. Diamagnetism is actually pretty rare on the periodic table. Most things have 1 or more unpaired electrons. However, you can always say, at the very least, that the end of these periods, those are always going to be diamagnetic. So all of the noble gases are diamagnetic. And Blake is right. This is one of the reasons why the nonmetals, which gain electrons to become like the noble gases. With a filled shell, you have the diamagnetic, non-interested in anything else kind of attitude, which is nice. It's also the reason why the metals, as we're going to see, like to lose electrons to become like the noble gases. The more diamagnetic, filled shell kind of feeling you can have, the more stable the atoms. So this is like just a quick kind of animation of these different ones. And you can see how you're adding more electrons as you go left to right. Starting with boron with 1 unpaired, 2 to 3. Then you start pairing at oxygen. Fluorine has 2 paired sets, and then of course neon doesn't have any. And this kind of pattern works out really well for all of the p electrons actually on them, not just the 2p, which we're seeing right here, but also the 3p and the 4p.
But if you will count, like for example, silver.
Silver is a D block element, and the D's are different than the ones we're talking about right now.
I understand, but it's building up. It's getting harder and harder to, let's say, to make it plus, to make an address for the element.
Yeah.
It's getting harder and harder the more protons the bigger total number?
I prefer to think about it as more interesting than more harder. But of course, my glass is always half filled, not half empty, Eleonora, too, you have to realize. But yeah, there are some different rules for the D's and stuff, and we'll talk about those here in a little bit. These are really good rules for the main group elements, which are the A groups, the 1A and 2A on the left, and the 3A through 8A on the right. And the transition metals, lanthanides and actinides, which honestly are my favorite elements, there are just some different kind of rules and stuff. So hold that thought. We'll come back to it. So we're just in the boring main groups right now, I know. Sodium, 11 electrons. This is the first one now that has a 3s electron. So hopefully you're seeing some patterns here. All of the s's hold up to 2 electrons, and we're gonna see that all of the p's hold up to 6 electrons after what Eleonora asked about. But you can also tell that the configurations are getting longer and longer. And for me to say it, 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s1, it gets longer, more boring to listen to, let's be honest. So, chemists will sometimes use what's called a noble gas configuration to make it a little easier to designate what the electrons are. So we saw in the last couple slides that 1s2, 2s2, 2p6 is a neon core. It's a neon configuration. So what sometimes people will do is they'll put neon in brackets like that, and then any electrons pass the noble gas after it. So instead of saying 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s1, you can say neon in square brackets, 3s1. They call this the noble gas or the rare gas notation. And that's totally legit. And as the elements get bigger, silver, absolutely, and the bigger ones yet, using a noble gas is really cool. Now, you can only use noble gases going backward. So for example, fluorine is right next to neon, but you couldn't say it's like neon take away one, all right? For fluorine, you'd have to say helium 2s2 2p5. You always have to go backwards to use the noble gas configuration, but it does make your life a little bit easier, especially when you start getting to the bigger ones. Another thing that happens when you use the noble gas notation is that all of the alkali metals, the group 1A, they'll have some kind of noble gas core configuration and then NS1 outside of it. So we saw that hydrogen has just 1S1 and there's no noble gas by it, so it's boring. But you could write lithium here as a helium core 2s1, it has one more electron than the nearest noble gas, and it's 2s1 because of the 2 right there. Sodium is a neon core 3s1, potassium right below it would be the last noble gas, which is argon, argon 4s1, rubidium would be a krypton 5s1, francium would be radon, Rn, 7s1. This is a pattern for all the alkali metals, and it's also a reason why they all kind of react in a similar way, too. They all have that one outer electron which really wants to be gone, wants to be like the noble gases, like Blake brought up earlier. Now aluminum, I'm gonna skip magnesium. Aluminum, 13 electrons. 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s2, 3p1. Who cares? Neon, 3s2, 3p1 makes your life a lot easier. It's not wrong to write the complete noble gas electron configurations, but it does make your life easier. But like before and stuff like that, you can still make the orbital box notation. 1s2, 2s2, 2p6 was neon. 3s2, 3p1 outside of it. And we can see here clearly that 3p1 means that this is paramagnetic. It's kind of cool. Now, all of the group 3As will have some kind of a noble gas core, NS2, NP1. So for aluminum in period 3, all right, it would be a neon in there, 3s2, 3p1, and that's totally cool. And if you're curious about gallium, looking at Connor, I saw it earlier. Gallium, all right, is right under aluminum, so it would have an argon core. It's in the fourth period, 4s2, for P1. But wait a minute, I skipped all of those D electrons. So this noble gas configuration for group 3A works, but do be aware there's going to be some D electrons in the middle. And Eleanor has already been asking about that. In the case of gallium, you would say it's 4s2 3d10 for P1. So when you get to gallium on down, don't forget your D electrons. That's what this little note right here is saying. We'll talk more about the transition metals here in a little bit. Their number is period number minus 1. That's why there's the N minus 1 right there. Phosphorus, 15 electrons, 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s2, 3p3, or neon, 3s2, 3p3. So the orbital box here has 3s2, 3p3. And just like with aluminum a second ago, these guys also have a family, if you will, of patterns, all right? It would be some kind of noble gas core, neon, for example, 3s2, 3p3. And if you go under phosphorus to arsenic, King's poison, I heard yesterday, the nearest noble gas from arsenic would be argon. So you would write argon 4s2 4p3, but you have to remember the D electrons in there as well. So you would also put the 3d10 inside there if it was for arsenic or one later on. So let's see if we can figure out what the electron configuration is going to be for chlorine. And to do this, you go to where chlorine is on the periodic table. It's number 17. So we'll have 17 electrons total. Now, here's a whole bunch of configurations. And one way you could do this, if the whole 1s2, 2s2 is still weird, is you could literally count up the numbers in the superscripts. Chlorine is number 17, so chlorine then should have 17 electrons. So for example, the first one has 2, 2, 6, that's 10, plus 5. This only has 15 electrons. That would not be chlorine. That's not a good configuration anyway. And if you count up the next one, 2, 2, 6, that's 10, plus 2, plus 5, sure enough, that is 17. And when you look at these others, you'll see that they are not 17. So in this case, the answer was B. There are 17 electrons inside there. 1s2, 2s2, 2p5 would be fluorine right above it. Something with a 4s2 shell, we could go 4s2, that would be calcium, et cetera, et cetera. The best way, of course, would be to say 1s2 gets us to helium, 2s2 gets us to beryllium, 2p6 would be up to neon, so this part right there would be a neon core, 3s2 would get us to magnesium, and then 3p5 would get us to chlorine. Any questions? Okay, so the main group metals are pretty chill because the period number follows the outer S and P par pretty well. But what we do need to talk about is what Eleonora was asking about, which are the other ones on the periodic table. Specifically, the middle groups here, which are kind of a light green color, those are the D block elements or the transition metals. And then this kind of off purple color down here, these are the F block elements. The top level are the lanthanides, and the bottom level are the actinides. And remember that lanthanides and actinides, they kind of break apart the periodic table right there. If you were to put these in there, the periodic table would be much wider. And it's hard to put something really wide on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, let's be honest. So I think that's why the lanthanides and actinides are usually placed under the periodic table like that. All of the transition metals are transition metals because of the D block elements, the D's like silver and stuff like that. And the only really thing you have to think about is that the N number for those will be N minus 1. So scantium, number 21, scantium is in the fourth period, that 4 right there. But to figure out the D block it belongs to, you go N minus 1, 4 minus 1, scantium begins the 3D shell. So scantium is 3D1,
titanium, 3D2, et cetera, et cetera. Silver down here, the next one, is in the fifth period, but 5 minus 1 means that silver is actually far to the 4D shell. It's got N minus 1, and you can always do it that way. And of course, there's a lot of these crazy transition metals out there and stuff, but the first and most important thing is just to realize it's the N value, the period number, minus 1. So let's do some examples. Potassium, 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s2, 3p6, 4s1, too many syllables. Argon, 4s1 would be the noble gas notation. And then you can go calcium, which is one more electron than potassium. Calcium would be argon, 4s2. When you add one more electron, you get to scandium. All right, scandium has one more electron, and it's the beginning of the D block.
How do we know it's the D block, Dr. Russell?
Excellent question. The B's right here on our American version of the periodic table will tell you that you're in the D block elements. The ones we were looking at before had an A on top of them. I've been calling those the main group elements. All the A groups are main groups because they're not quite as weird to figure out. The B's right here, these are now the transition metals. And these are the ones that you take this number and you subtract 1 from. So scandium is in the fourth period, but it's the beginning of the D block. That's why this is a 3D1 right there. Does that make sense? Questions? Okay. So you keep going, titanium, using the airplanes and stuff, argon, 4s2, 3d2, no problem. Vanadium, named after a goddess of beauty, argon, 4s2, 3d3. Chromium, my curse and my beloved element. I studied chromium as a graduate student, and I really do have fond feelings for it. However, chromium is being difficult. And really, it's not being difficult, it's just being itself. Now, all of these rules we've been talking about today follow the N plus L rule. And that means that 1s is always first and filled in before you go to 2s, and then 2s is filled in before you go to 2p, et cetera, et cetera. For reasons which are not understood very well, instead of chromium being a 4s2, 3d4, which is what you'd predict, chromium decides to have one of the s electrons jump ship, and you end up with a 4s1, 3d5. Is this more or less paramagnetic, do you think, than what we would have seen if chromium would have followed our rules?
More,
that's right. You had a 4s2, an up and a down. Now you have just a 4s1. And what you would have had 3d4 normally, now you actually have 3d5. And you can think about that as 5 rooms, each one of them with a single electron. Chromium is breaking our N plus L rule. And this is a limitation right now in terms of where chemistry is in terms of the theory. We don't have a good reason to explain why chromium is 4s1, 3d5 instead of 4s2, 3d4. So just realize that the current state of this theory has some problems. The N plus L rule breaks down, and you'll see that. Now, if I asked you what the electron configuration was of chromium, and you told me 4s2, 3d4, I would absolutely give you credit for it, because that would be the predicted electron configuration using the N plus L rule. However, if you are hip and you know that this is 4s1, 3d5, I would also give you credit for that, because that's what it's really like in the real world. So try to think about it not as, oh, chemistry's lame, and you can think that anyway if you want to, but what I'd like you to think about it is that, hey, we've still got some work left to do, all right? Maybe Wednesday we'll have the McKenzie rule that will explain why chromium is 4s1, 3d5. Just hasn't happened quite yet, and it also means you have 2 ways to win, woohoo, because you can put down 4s1, 3d5, or 4s2, 3d4, and get credit for it. So this is not set in stone. Yeah.
Is chromium the only one like that?
No. Unfortunately. It's not even predictable, Isaiah. That's the hard thing. Like if it was chromium and molybdenum, I could make a prediction. But molybdenum follows the rule and chromium doesn't. It's very weird.
Okay.
And that's what I'm sure you've been seeing, so yeah. All right, manganese, the one right next door, does follow the rule. It's 4s2 3d5, so we're back on the predicted N plus L rule. Copper is another one that doesn't follow the rule. All right, I skipped cobalt in there. Copper is another one. It's a 4s1 3d10, all right? So instead of being 4s2 3d9, which is what you'd predict, another electron jumps ship and becomes this one. So these are the two exceptions in the 3D set. There are certainly other ones as you go to 4D and 5D. And they're not like predictable. Like it's not like copper, silver, and gold. It's just copper and stuff like that. Good. Questions on that? Okay. So these crazy guys are exceptions. They don't follow the N plus L rule, all right? If you put down as an answer the actual, what you'd predict by N plus L, that's totally fine with me. But I do want you to see that this is a limitation of our theory, all right? And no one has figured it out yet. There's some anomalies. They figured some electrons are more stable than others in certain orbitals. I think it's kind of BS, to be honest. There's another competing theory called the Russell-Saunders scheme, and I love the name Russell. It's not me, Russell, but anyway, but it's better for the heavier ones. It's not good for the lighter elements, so no one's taken that one up yet. This is, people have some work to do on this, all right? So you're seeing here again that chemistry is still dynamic. It's still evolving and stuff. This is definitely one of the places people haven't figured it out yet. Now, the lanthanides have F orbitals in them. And as we talked about briefly earlier, while the Ds, you take the period number and you subtract 1, the Fs, you take the period number and you subtract 2. So here's some examples of these things. Cerium is actually a xenon core. And by the way, Ce is number 58 here. So if you go backwards, 57, 56, 55, nearest noble gas is 54 xenon. It has a xenon core, 6s2, but then check this out, 5d1, 4f1. We expect the 4f's to get filled in first, but for whatever reason, cerium's also not following N plus L rule. Here's another exception, uranium, all right? It should be a radon 7s2 61 5f3. We would expect it to be a 7s2 5f4. You see more and more exceptions as the atoms get bigger. So again, you're just seeing that N plus L is not the best for these. If you put down what you would expect, you will absolutely get credit for it. But if you're gonna publish a paper, you better know what the actual configurations are and then go from there in your mind. Your textbook will have a list of lots of electron configurations. And again, most of them follow it pretty well. It's just that there are some of these kind of wild exceptions. So again, here's like the electron filling order. And again, you can use the N plus L rule or whatever. But the important thing I want you to see is that 4s is followed by 3d. And that's the N minus 1 thing. Just like 5s is followed by 4d, again, N minus 1. After 6s, the next one should be the 4f. It's this number minus 2. And after 4f would be 5d. But you don't always see that, all right? There are exceptions and stuff. And then between 7s and 7p, you should have 5f first and then 6d after. That would be the best way to do things. Any questions on that? All right, we'll do some more stuff, especially with ions on Friday. Have a great day, guys.